Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome, AfterBuzzers, to another amazing episode of Siren. Things are getting so heavy. This episode was a little bit dark. It's called A Voice in the Dark, actually, which is kind of ironic. I'm joined by the one, the only, Brenna Owen today. Welcome, Brenna. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a joy to come to AfterBuzz TV because you're just so on it. You're all over Siren.
Yeah, we love it. I mean, your character is amazing. You have done an amazing job since day one. I'm the biggest fan, but we are also joined by Nyjah. I definitely couldn't do this alone. How are you, Nyjah?
Good. How are you guys?
Amazing. I feel like this is the perfect episode to have you on because your character kind of switched up this episode. So I'm super excited to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about Tia's call and how it's completely taking over Crystal Cove. Hope is back on land, baby Hope. She's a completely different baby now. And Hunter is back. And is she a friend or is she a foe? I think we kind of get a clear answer at the end. But we also don't know who's pulling the strings here. So we can definitely get into all of that. But I want to start off with you, Renna. So we see that Tia's causing a lot of chaos. Tia's a completely new character to this season of Siren. What are your thoughts on Tia?
I think way back to the episode where Helen actually met Tia, I never trusted her. I knew something was just not right. I didn't like her. And in a later episode, I say to fellow blue-eyed mermaids that Tia is a tyrant, and she is a tyrant. She's a cold, calculated mermaid.
Yeah. You said it perfectly. Yeah. Right. I think Nyjah and I can definitely agree with you. And since we have you here now, definitely. I would love to hear your thoughts on what you think of Rob.
Was that for me or for?
Yes, for you, Renna, sorry.
Oh. For you.
Rob, I think I really grew to like Rob. He intentionally was the kind of character that was left quite mysterious and you didn't really know what was going on with him and was he a goodie and was he a baddie? And then eventually the twist, but we knew what the twist was. But I don't think anybody anticipated that he was going to be a mer person. Nobody saw that one coming.
Definitely not.
It just made him, because he was so vulnerable and sincere in his kind of chemistry and liking Maddie, and that he just, I really kind of fell for him as a character. Yeah. He's a good guy. You know, now I'm very clear. There's nothing bad about this character. He's a good guy. He cares about Maddie. He obviously cares about Rin. Enough so to kind of go take them back to his kind of tribe and kind of have to cross that tricky bridge with him. So I think Rob's a really good guy, and I'd be interested to see what would become of Rob or a potential Maddie-Rob relationship, because I know a lot of fans have been disappointed with the thruple being broken up. Mm-hmm. But the reality is Maddie made her choice. Maddie made her decision, and it was against who she was as a human being to live with Ben knowing that he had killed somebody. She just couldn't get her head around it. So for her, she had to just withdraw. And, you know, when you look at the character of Maddie, that's kind of, that writing's been on the wall throughout each season. She's always had a very high moral compass code. And I think that's a lot to do with how she was raised by her father, our sheriff of Bristol Cove. So she's in a new place and a new relationship. So I'm interested to see what happens with them both.
Yeah, me too. I feel like it's been such an interesting ride with all of these new characters. I feel like this story has completely taken a turn I never once saw coming. when I started watching this show. And you kind of called it last time you were here, and you said like the finale is gonna be crazy. You're not gonna see it coming, and you were so right. And things have taken a turn since then. This episode starts off with Xander being rushed into the ER room. My biggest nightmare came true. I feel like Xander is one of those characters that I just love so much. He's so selfless. And I feel like, you know, a part of me was kind of mad because he wasn't supposed to even have the cell phone on him at the wedding. But he said, you know, I trust myself. I can be responsible. I don't think it'll piss Jenny off. So he kept it on him. And that's the only reason he answered the call, because
Also, he had to keep it on because remember Maddie said they literally are waiting for the alert in case anything big or large comes into the harbor, then they know it's Tia. And she asked him about that. She said, well, no one's going to have their phones on. And he said, no, I'll keep mine on vibrate. So there was a reason for him keeping the phone on for vibrate. And he is now kind of our local up and coming sheriff.
Very true. Yeah. So then because of that, he was the only person that had it on. But then we later realized that everyone got the call, not just Xander. Ben got it as well. Maddie got it. So she was trying to bring them all down. Nigel, what did you think when we saw that realization happen on the show?
I was just like, wow, Tia is like legit crazy for even being able to go in and hack everything and then send it to everyone. I was just like, oh, she's really trying to take down the humans like right now. And I was just like, she's very diabolical and I cannot get over that like at all.
Highly sophisticated, and she was set up as that character in her first episodes, where we found out that she spoke multiple languages, could read books, she had the ultimate training in the Russian, under the Russian military. So she's is the most highly evolved merperson we've had on our series. I mean, Rob's evolved to a certain degree, but he's got this passion for the environment. Tia is just quite brilliant, deadly, exceptional, but in a very evil way.
Exactly. From the beginning, I think we all kind of came to the conclusion that she's very advanced. And, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And I don't think she's being very responsible. And it's quite scary.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, she kind of lays down her case at the beginning when she takes Rin aside for the conversation about the fact that the humans are destroying the planet and destroying their environment. And those were really legitimate arguments. You also find out about Tia that she was not treated well and that she had her siren song cut out of her. So that's hugely damaging to
traumatizing.
Yeah. And also too, you're actually going to find out something else that's very pertinent and profound about Tia in episode 10. And I think that for me, that's filmmaking at its highest level, when you can understand why a bad character is making bad choices, is when you go, oh, okay, that's really why she's so vengeful and wants revenge and is so angry, really angry with human beings.
It kind of really reminds me of like Black Panther, how you see Michael B. Jordan, and it's like he's the villain, but you also at the end sympathize with him so heavily. It's amazing. So, I mean, thanks for the little tease. Yeah. I'm excited to see what that sympathy is going to be, or if I even have it, because at the moment, you know, she's brought up a lot of, like, I think anger for a lot of people watching the show at the moment. But I want to go on to talk about how Xander's clearly in a very critical condition. They don't have the echo chamber sound anymore, which is really the only cure. And then Maddie also goes ahead and calls the commanders, asking for help, letting them know what Tia is doing. And they're actually not really showing any interest, which is odd considering how heavily they went after Rin and her sister and trying to get as much research on them as possible. Are we surprised with the lack of progress they're making in healing Xander?
I think there's a couple of things, dynamics going on. First, the last thing that he does say to Maddie on the phone call is, we'll be there. They are going to come and check in and see what's going on. You've also got to remember the original military person they dealt with got killed by Tia. So you've got whole new military personnel who aren't literally up to date with how our original guy was. But Tia took him out episode two, or was it episode one? She took him out real quick. So Carl was the one that was in the know with mermaids, merpeople, and what was going on in Bristol Cove. So these new military people, even in the last episode, they were shocked. They just thought that Tia was a Russian operative. They had no idea that she was a merperson. It took Rin and Ben and Maddie to tell them that. So now they realize, now what's happening on a greater mass with the technology and people being dying and taken down, now they're realizing that this is a serious threat, a very real threat. And so the military, he did say to Maddie that they would be on their way. And so obviously we anticipate seeing them in episode 10.
I'm kind of surprised by their lack of, I would expect them to show up a little quicker. I feel like a whole lot of time has gone by and the only person really helping is Eliza at the moment. Do you think that they're going to find a cure for Xander and Aisha, or do you think this is...
I don't know, and I can't say because of spoilers. I mean, I can say somebody's going to go down. Somebody is going to go down. But, you know, here's the reality of episodic filmmaking is you've only got 45, 46 minutes. And a big part of the episode had to be dedicated to Hope, seeing Hope as a little mermaid underwater and having her first kill, and then seeing Hope come to land, and then seeing Hope and Rin coming together as a mother and a daughter, and then seeing Hope meet my character and meet other characters, and then see Hope being taken to safety. Thank God for the hybrids. I mean, the reality is, if it hadn't have been for Helen's relations, hybrid relations, that baby would not exist. And that was a big part of the second half of season two, was Helen having this relationship with the hybrids to find out that they had a doctor in the facilities where they could do IVF, where we could get to the baby. So there's only so much you can do in each episode. Like a lot of fans said at the end when poor old Auntie Helen, Helen kind of runs out and tries to, you know, save Hope, but ultimately Hunter, who I really dislike right now, is 100% mermaid. So she's going to have more strength than Helen, but, you know, at least Helen gives it a good go. And a few fans were like, well, why didn't Helen yell out to the other mermaids and they could have all come out and chased after Rin? Well, guess what? I know. And it's a fair enough point, but guess what? Our 46 minutes were up.
Very true.
And you have to streamline it. And a very quick example, I got cast in Star Wars Episode 3, Attack of the Sith, but I knew that the scenes, these new senators, were extraneous and would get cut out because they weren't intrinsic to the main storyline, which was about Anakin going to the dark side. So if you look at each episode, it has a very clear, streamlined story, and that's the way you make television. Otherwise, we would have done more with the military. We would have done more with maybe getting the other mermaids involved. But you literally have to, in each episode, in every TV series is like this, you always shoot a lot more than you know that you can actually use. So in the editing room, that's when our bosses sit down and go, okay, we need that moment. We need this moment. We need that. We can live without that moment, but we need this to tell the story. And Hope was a very, very important part of the storytelling of episode 9 for obvious reasons, because she gets taken by Hunter. Hunter is I really dislike
her. I couldn't with that part. Yeah, it was really sad to see, because I felt like she was very loyal to Rin. But I wanted to touch on one last thing about Tia's calls. Were we surprised to see that she made a mass call to all of Crystal Cove, and then the chaos that ensued right after that? You want to start, Naija?
Yeah.
Naija, can you?
Yes, I was a little surprised at the fact. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry, go right ahead.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, I was a little surprised at the fact that that she did do a mass call to the whole town, because I thought she wanted to just like pinpoint certain people at the moment and be like, basically like those ones are targeted. But so then when she did do it, I was like, oh, she's really trying to like wipe everyone out, which I get because she does have her reasons, but it's still kind of crazy to me at the same time.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised because how else could she create such mass destruction?
She's very effective.
It's very effective. And she also witnessed the Russians had cut her song out and had witnessed that the Russians had used her song as a weapon, where she's like, great, I don't have to go all the way to Russia to do this. I just need to hack into this one, hack into that, and this is all my cleverness, and do this and do that, and I can take out the entire Bristol Cove. So very clever, very sophisticated. And, you know, it's uncanny how our writers have often written stories that have gone on to represent life. And, I mean, if you look at episode 16 of season 2 and this kind of these current episodes 9 and 10, everyone's getting taken out. You know, they're getting taken out by a siren song, but people in our life right now are getting taken out by a virus, and we're all on shutdown, we're all on lockdown. You know, we're very blessed. We have the most genius writers, showrunner, directors, fantastic cast and crew, and we're just very, very lucky.
Yeah, it's definitely amazing writing. One thing that I was super disappointed about was Ben's dad's reaction to everything and refusing to help. I feel like he could have made a big difference in slowing at least the progression of Tia's call harming everybody, and he refused to help. So that was definitely a bummer. And he posed very, very important questions that I think are important for Ben to hear, because at the end of the day, he loves Rin, but is that really a realistic love for your life? Like Ben's dad says, you know, she's going to destroy your life. And a part of me agrees with him because look at what's gone on. There's no way to deny it, you know?
Yeah, he asked, he put out there the real tough questions about the toxicity of the relationship. And, you know, that's something that this season particularly has looked at, is that relationship and how torn they both are, each character that they really want to be together. And, you know, Rin kind of thinking, well, maybe she can live on land, but then she realizes she can't give up the ocean. And Ted's right about a lot of things, you know, that she is in his mind and she has affected him. And that's been the storyline since day one when she first came into his life. And the whole premise of the show was set on that sentence. This is what happens. I mean, Bristol Cove is a small coastal region town, famous for its myths and legends of mermaids. And the story is about what happens when a real life mermaid comes to land. And he inevitably falls in love with her. And one of the things that's happened this season, because the throuple got broken up for valid and very viable reasons, it meant that the story then really focused on Ben and Rin, and let's look at, you know, and how are they going to resolve this relationship? You know, do we find out if there's a resolution? Can they live happily ever after? I mean, these are all questions that are going to be asked in episode 10. But Ted's right. And Ted, listen, he's a society man. He's like been the mayor of this town. He isn't suddenly going to turn Team Mermaid. His history with mermaids is already very, very tainted. And he doesn't like what he's seen his son become. He doesn't like, you know, Ben was this aspiring marine biologist and had a great relationship with Maddie and a good thing going from. They've always clashed from episode one, because they're just different people. But I think parents, you know, even if I can use the example, I couldn't be an actor in my generation because it just wasn't considered a real job. Your parents want what's best for you. And later in your life, you go, oh, maybe, why did they do that? But at the time, Ted wants what's best for Ben. And, you know, Ted's not all bad. There is some good in Ted, and I love the relationship that Helen and Ted have, because they've always like have this ongoing sparring relationship. And I love the scene that involves Xander again.
Yes, I love that. Take
loan back in the other season, and I say I want to get my heritage money, and Ted says, you know, well, what are you going to do with it? And Helen kind of jokes, I might go and buy me a Maserati. I mean, Helen gets the best one-liners, but you know, the other good thing that's come out of this season is Helen's character has been able to obviously stay involved with Rin, the leading characters, but she's also had her own storylines in terms of the spirituality. And that's been a great new shade and color to storytelling, that we get to glimpse the spiritual lives of the Mer people. It's also opened the storylines for Xander to have his own storyline. And out of, as a result of going through what he went through in season one and two, it drove him to want to become a cop so that he could do good for his community. And he's really redeemed himself. I think out of all of the characters, he's had the biggest character arc.
Yes, definitely. Season,
and he's just blossomed and thrived, and he's a wonderful character. And he's gone from being the character that all the fans hated at the end of season one because he killed Donna, to now the character that everyone's rooting for because he is a good guy. And I love doing scenes with Xander. We've got this kind of auntie-nephew thing going on, and it's great. And we've had a lot of fun together this season.
I think at the moment, everyone on the show needs to take a page from Xander's book because he's the only mature person, it seems like, at the moment. And another thing I really, really love is Helen's character and Ted, Ben's dad, is that Helen's able to check him. And he's not aggressive about it. He kind of, like, respects it to an extent, it seems like. Like, this episode, Helen told him, you know, I know you want to control situations so badly, but this is completely out of your control.
Yeah.
And he just stood there and took it, and I loved it. And you do it so calm and collected, but you stand your ground. It's amazing.
Well, it's also true. We have, listen, me and the phenomenal actor, David Cubitt, who plays Ted, and I first became familiar with him and really fell in love with him when he was one of the leading supporting roles on Medium. Remember that great show?
Yes.
You know, he's a good-looking guy, but he's a really good actor. And we have so much fun when we do scenes together. We often crack up. We often lose it because we just... I just remember when we did this scene, he said, like, yeah, of course you... Of course Helen's going to say that to me. He just expected Helen to kind of tell him off. And really, he couldn't come back at Helen because what could he say? It's like, she's right. And this is a message for everybody. This story is bigger than all of us. It always has been.
Absolutely.
And it always will be. And it just blows my mind. You know, we're always just shook up and shaken by the stuff we get to read and the stuff we're so blessed to get to create, because we really do have a genius godfather and a genius showrunner. And Joe Menendez, who is our directing producer, who oversees all the episodes and all our episodic directors. I feel it's TV at its best in terms of...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And all the characters, they're just good, and they're original characters, and they've all got really interesting relationships. So 10 is going to be a really heart-wrenching episode. I mean,
this is why
emotional just thinking about it and having to watch it, you know.
This is why we need to know there's gonna be a season 4. I need something to look forward to after this quarantine.
We're kind of all waiting to find out. We don't know. I mean, I think, you know, Freeform this past week announced what it's doing with all its other shows, and it did announce 2 days, was it Monday or Tuesday, 1 or 2 days before the finale of Motherland, that Motherland was going to be renewed. So I think we're going to find out either before our season finale or just after, because Disney has their digital market thing happening, I believe, May 26th, next week.
So very soon.
So they didn't just kind of announce yay or nay last week. They're saving it. I think they're saving it. So it could go either way. You just, as an actor, you just have to go with the flow.
Well, fingers crossed that there definitely is one, because this story cannot end here. I would like to move on to Hope. So she's clearly on land now, and she's adorable. She's adorable. Yeah. And we heard coming on land, Rin learned for the first time that the echo chamber was what Tia exploded underwater. Yeah. What do we think this means for the future of Rin's tribe now that there is no voices of their ancestors?
Yeah, it's kind of, it was always a really poignant scene. I remember reading that. And it's a question we all have to ask of ourselves is, who are we without our ancestors?
Absolutely.
You know, our ancestors, our heritage, where they come from, where we come from, it's all part and parcel of who we are as human beings and who we become. And we do evolve. That's life. You know, we evolve with each decade. So it's going to be interesting to see how that is remedied. And it may not be, there may not be a remedy for it this season. But it's certainly a bigger question that warrants being answered possibly in a season four. What do they do about that? Can they create a new chamber where they can they rescue the voices of their ancestors? Have they gone to a different realm? I mean, granted, Helen in this episode, this season, took a sea herb and went on a certain trip. But even before she took that sea herb that Georgia gave her, Sarge was coming to her. Sarge was coming to her from a spiritual realm. And he came and he wanted to help and he wanted to protect her. And that led to Auntie Helen's first scene underwater. And then it ultimately, you know, he came back to help me to put Donna at peace. So I think if we were to do a season four, I think there's a real more to discover and divulge in that spiritual realm of how does Rin and her tribe and her kind restore a part of their history that has been destroyed?
I agree. It's a very important question that I don't think we'll necessarily get the answer to right away, but it's a big one. What do you think, Nyjah? What do you think not having their ancestor voices means for the future of Rin's tribe?
I'm hoping that they do find a way to get it back because, like Rena says, they're kind of nothing without your ancestors. They kind of need that to go back and look at. So hopefully that they do get something. And I think it's kind of messed up that Tia did do that because just, like, you know, that's their ancestors. Like, why? But, you know, I don't know what she was thinking when she did that. I mean, she knew it was, like, secure and everything, but that's still kind of messed up.
I definitely think it was very tactical on Tia's part to kind of get rid of their ancestors' voices in the echo chamber because what she's trying to do is obviously control the waters and kind of discourage them and weaken them. And that's definitely one way to do it. I definitely think there's a future for the tribe after this. You know, they're going to come back from it just like we're going to come back from coronavirus.
That's right. That's right. This too shall pass. And that's true when storytelling. You know, there is going to be a climax. You know, that's what every season finale has, is a climax and a certain resolution to certain storylines. And you can always pretty much count on a season finale to leave you going, oh my God, what's going to happen next?
And so that's what we look forward to.
There are questions that will be answered and there's big questions that you're just going to go, oh my God, what's going to happen? A bit like, you know, every good season does that. And the end of season two, when you're left with that scene where we see Rin's embryo in the uterus of a hybrid, and you just go, oh my God. I just recently watched The Ovarks, and the same thing. That last scene of their season three, there's a scene, oh, it's just like, it just leaves you just stunned, and you just go, oh God, I can't wait to watch the next season. So that's every good storytelling in television. So you're going to be left wanting is all I'm going to say.
Oh, I love it and I hate it. It's a love-hate relationship with cliffhangers. But the last thing I want to go ahead and touch on about this episode is Helen, just the way she goes into protection mode. I think it's a side of her that we've never seen. I didn't think it was a side of her that maybe she had in her. She's very, you know, calm, collective. She handles things in a very rational manner. And she decided to take on Hunter. Were you surprised when you read that?
Oh, I was thrilled. I was like, yay. I finally get a little bit of action because it has been part of the journey and discovery of the character Helen way back to an episode in the first eight of season two, where I'm taking the Mer people, including Sarge, to the cave for their own protection. and that Sarge falls off the cliff and Helen reaches out and grabs him and pulls him up. And that's, you know, the writers always wanted me to play it surprised. And I said, so she doesn't know she has this extra strength. And they said, no, not really. So it's almost like going back to season one, at the end of season one and episode 10 at the graveyard, when I reveal to Ben and Maddie that I'm one of them, that I'm 1/8 mermaid. She came out of the closet. And then throughout the course of different seasons and different episodes, she's discovering these mermaid skills she's had, because now she's in the open and now she can kind of be who she really is. And so we know that she's got this extra strength. We also know from this season that she has the ability to have really long breath hold and go under the water yes. to meet Sarge. So maybe we can get more of that if we go to season four. And once again, we see her with some extra strength. It was one of my favorite scenes, and it was quite comical doing it. And dear Joe Menendez, he said, this is like your Reservoir Dog scene where you're missing the brain. And it's when, you know, I get called over to deal with the dead body of the hybrid. And this hybrid is like 6.5 foot tall, you know, huge male. And, you know, and I go in and Xander's showing me the body, and Xander's like, well, maybe if you open the door, you know, I can kind of drag him. And Helen hands Xander a handbag and says, you know, I got this. You get the door, and literally lifts up that 6.5 foot male and, you know, takes him to the car. And so, you know, she kind of, you saw her strength again with trying to take on Hunter, but ultimately failing, because Hunter is a 100% pure breed, and they're always mm-hmm. going to be physically stronger than Helen, but they may not be mentally or emotionally stronger in some way. Boy, would I have loved the opportunity to kick Hunter's butt or Tia's butt, but, you know, hey, they've got a mermaid, war coming up in episode 10, and that's going to be epic, and it's going to be a pretty stunning episode.
I like that you bring up the being mentally and emotionally stronger, mainly because, you know, that is definitely a strength over someone. So you could come out victorious. We don't know what's going to happen next episode. You may totally win over Hunter. So
that's right. I don't know what's going to become of Hunter or Tia or other characters for that matter, but Helen's always had that very fiercely protective nature, because these are her people mm-hmm. and she's protected them from day one. She's just been a lot more out there with it now, because she's out. She's out in yes. the community, and she's got her hybrids, and, you know, they blow out the windows of her shop, and she's kind of looking around thinking, okay, we're in this nice little quaint community. I'm just going to kind of push you guys away. You go to the hybrid ranch and I'll clean up the mess. So she's very practical. And I think it was good that she had got the opportunity to have at least somewhat of a romance with Sarge, because, you know, that's just like us in life. You know, it opens other aspects of who we are as individuals. So I think there's a lot more to be explored with Auntie Helen. I really do.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's so many layers to Helen. It's amazing. But since you just brought up Hard, we're going to jump right into our interview portion of this show. One of the questions we have for you is, what do you think about Helen and Sarge's relationship? Were they supposed to be friends, or are they something more than that?
I think it was always something more than that, and they had that connection in the first or second episode of season two, and I just think, and I can still remember the feeling, it's when Sarge sniffs out Helen, it's when we're in the cabin where we're hiding the mermaids and the mermen, and she's sitting there and he comes up and he touches her hair and she acknowledges that she's one of them, and he bows down to her. And it just blew me away as Helen. It's like, wow, there was just something so humbling about that moment, because it certainly doesn't happen in our world. and so we always had this bond, and it's like, you know, each merman, it's part of who they are, that they find something they've got to protect. And Levi was always about fiercely protecting Rin, and so Sarge took it upon himself to fiercely protect Helen, and that really redeemed him, and it kind of, what's that word, you know, when it softened her, and when he shows up at the shop and he says, "You're here, I'm here," and she's like all gooey, and she said, "Oh my God, so you want to stay here? You want to come and stay with me?" And she feeds him sardines in the shop. And then, you know, but then they ultimately, so they do, it was developing this potential romance between the two characters, but then they go out to take the oil rig down, and Sarge sacrificed himself, which said a lot about his character, because he did that in order to save two of the other mermaids from getting killed and taken out. He took himself out. If he had not been killed, would there have been room for developing that relationship? Who knows? Okay, so there you are.
Next, we had dropped
technical difficulties. Where did we leave off? I'm sorry. What did I miss?
That's fine. They were definitely developing this chemistry and this romance, but it was cut short. And you know, in this season, it was cut short because Sarge sacrificed himself. But in this season, they were able to kind of explore it more through the spiritual realm. But obviously, that doesn't include physicality or romance, or maybe a little element of romance, but it can't go where we know couples to go. Doesn't happen, but he's definitely very dear to Helen, and he's someone that she found love for. Is there, if we go to season four, could there be a romance for Auntie Helen? Maybe. I don't think it could lie with Sarge because he's in the spirit realm. And I'm just grateful that the writers found a really clever way of bringing him back, because you couldn't just, oh, suddenly he's alive again. It just, it kind of doesn't serve the integrity of the show. So bringing him back in the spiritual realm meant we got to learn new stuff about the Mer people and their spiritual culture. And, you know, and it's really, when you look at that, Helen's, you know, doing the smudging ceremony with Sage and summoning up the spirit of Sarge in order to talk to him and in order to seek guidance and find answers to her questions. People do that. They go to psychics, they go to clairvoyance, they want to go and talk to their departed. There's a lot of cultures that really, really believe and this is as part of their cultures. So it's, I always say, each to their own, you know. It's, I try not to judge something. It just, each to their own. And it's worked for Helen and Sarge, and it kind of gave us a really nice, beautiful storyline. And just, people are so happy when he comes back. So, you know, there's no stopping him from coming back. But I think even Sarge, if that was to happen and get further developed in future seasons, I think Sarge would even want Helen to have, you know, a partner or a mate in the human world.
I would love to see it. Helen needs some love. She deserves it. Okay, that's...
yeah, I agree. Yeah.
A question from you, Nyjah. Do you have anything?
Yes. Okay. So my question is, when Helen was being haunted by Donna, what would Brenna do? Because when I seen that scene and Donna was like,
yeah,
popped up, I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. So my question is, when Helen was being haunted by Donna, what would Brenna do? Because I was like, oh my God, that's kind of scary and creepy, and I probably would like run out of the kitchen. So, what would you do?
What would I do, Renna, or what did Helen do?
No, what would Renna do?
Oh, yeah.
would you be receptive?
Yeah, I'd have a similar, no, I think if all of us would be spooked if we suddenly looked out the window and saw a spirit. I mean, I remember that kind of happened to me as a kid a couple of times. So yeah, and I screamed and it frightened me. And I think I would have the same response now, that if I was to see a spirit or ghost, whatever you want to call it, in the room or through my window, it would I would get a little bit shaken up. But I think I'm now of an age that I wouldn't be as scared. Now I'd be more curious and go, well, yeah, I'd want to maybe explore if there's anything beyond just seeing something.
Yeah.
So that, I think that comes with maturity and not being so afraid anymore. But when I was a kid, I was really scared when I thought I saw ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were both super surprised by how calm and collective Helen was when being approached by Sarge, because we're like, if that was us, we would totally freak out. There's no way I would have been talking to my loved one.
I know, but the big difference there with Sarge's spirit, Sarge is very much at peace because he got buried, he died in his home, and he got afforded his merman burial, and a beautiful burial. And so his spirit, it's a loving feeling, whereas Donna, because she's not at peace and her bones and her body is still in the military, is a really unhappy spirit.
And that one frightens Helen a little bit.
Yeah, because she's decomposing in front of her. And I think it was one of my favorite scenes in the last episode. We get great scenes in every episode, but it was a beautiful scene when we had that ceremony down on at the beach, where Rin and Cammy and Helen were able to finally, Cammy was able, her daughter was able to take her back to the ocean, and so she could be at peace. So I think, I think Donna's spirit is now a lot more peaceful because she's at rest in the ocean. And the way she died was also traumatic. It was very, very traumatic the way she died. And we love Donna, love sister. But it's great that now we know that it should people die, or those who have died, that they can come back. And that they can visit us, and that maybe Auntie Helen can take another oceanic sea herb and go on the spirit world and say hi to everybody. So anything is possible.
If only it was that easy in real life, that would be super amazing. The last question we have for you to wrap up this interview is, obviously you've had a very, very long, amazing career. You're insanely talented. You've been in this industry for over 30 years, to my knowledge. Who has inspired you over the span of your career? Who inspires your craft, your work?
Oh gosh, a lot of different ones in different decades. I'm going to go right back to my childhood, the two movies that profoundly affected me. When I was a little person, our mother used to catch the bus, and our mother would take us to Saturday afternoon matinees in this old school cinema. And the first, well, it may not have been the first film, but it's the first film I remember because it made me cry and I never forgot it. And it was called Born Free, and it was set in Africa, and it was about a lion who had been brought up and with humans and was sent back to the wildlife. And it just made me cry. And I would always think about, I used to think her name was Clarence, but it wasn't. It was Elisa or Liza. But that film, and in my late teens, it was a film that Jack Nicholson did, called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And those films that shake you up, you always look to them. And when you think about the films, your favorite films, it's normally because they've touched you emotionally, or have affected you spiritually or psychically or mentally, because we see hundreds of movies, but we don't remember them all. So Jack Nicholson, I was a big fan of Jack Nicholson, and of course all the Godfathers, early Godfathers, and Brando and Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro and all those phenomenal filmmakers. I've been a big fan of Kate Blanchett, of a lot of just wonderful, and a lot of the old school actors, Bette Davis and but more recently in this past decade, I used to get disheartened because as an actress in your 40s, well, in my 40s, there wasn't a lot of opportunities because you're too old to be that hot babe on the block. But you're also too young to be the wise old sage or grandmother. And my mother would always say, just remember Helen Mirren and Dame Judi Dench. She said they never got their Hollywood breaks till their 50s. So I looked to them,
and that was true.
And so I'm getting I'm having a fantastic decade as an actress. And I think you know, I'm a character actor. So if you've hung on to your character and haven't disfigured yourself, or you still got that character and you've honed your craft, you will get work. So I say that to young actresses, just hang in there. And Tarantino, I've always been a huge fan of Tarantino. There's just too many for me to name, because actors and filmmakers, look, I've adored working with Seth MacFarlane on The Orville. I think he's a genius, and it's a gift to work with him. But I'm also gifted that I got to work with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg in 2002. Yes. I think it was 2002 or 2000. So I've worked with some amazing people. But every set you go to, whether that's a big budget studio movie or that's a small independent, it's TV or a short film, everything, you take the same value and the same worth to each production. Because there's one thing with camera, unlike a bad stage play, you can live down a bad stage play, but with camera, it's there for life. So you're always going to bring your A game to whatever it is you work on. And that's just a principle for life. Just bring the best you to everything you do.
Well, you definitely do that, and your career speaks for itself. We want to thank you so much for having us. We cannot get enough of this show. We're so excited to be covering it every single week, and having you here has been the biggest honor. I'm super excited to see what's going to happen next episode. I feel like after speaking to you and the little hints you gave us, we're definitely in for something crazy. But until next time, where can everyone find you, Renna?
I'm mostly on Instagram at Renna Owen. So that's R-E-N-A-O-W-E-N. Look for the blue tick. I'm Renna Owen.
Yes, official.
Yeah, official blue tick. And I got the blue tick on Facebook, which is the Renna Owen. But I really go to Instagram, because the good thing about posting on Instagram, you can share across three platforms. So I'm there. I'm on Instagram, and I do go to Twitter when we're live tweeting with the show. And we'll all find out soon enough if we're going to have a season four. But I certainly hope to talk some more Siren with you beautiful ladies in the future. And everyone,
I love that.
Stay well and stay safe.
Thank you so much. Thank we you. Appreciate you being here. Nigel, where can everyone find you?
Everybody can find me on Instagram at NIGJ4E's with an underscore. You can also find me on Twitter at Someone Say Nija.
And you can find me on Instagram at Carla L. Contreras and Twitter at Carla underscore C. It's been an amazing after show. Until next time, see you guys next week. It's going to be a good one, so make sure not to miss out.
And I got to say, happy Memorial Day weekend, people.
Oh, yes. You're safe.
Be safe.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.